everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. Tom, woke up this morning about 5:30, opened up the back door, and it... I couldn't believe it. It actually had kind of a feel of like September or something.
So it wasn't a mountain lion out
no,
there.
No, it wasn't a mountain lion, but went out in the garden and did the watering. It was beautiful. My goodness, this kind of weather, like 60, upper 50s in June, it just doesn't happen that way. So
we're riding the good weather train.
There we go. All right, and we're riding a good train here on the Buckmaster Show as we now, well, it's about 12 and a half years with our radio project in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio on this Friday, the ninth day of June, 2023. So we've got 12 and a half years with the radio. Then tack on 22 from the TV years. So we're 35 years serving the Tucson community. We're on 1030 KVOI, the voice for trusted news and talk. Worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. We do our telephone interviews and when folks call in and use our live line, that live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management. Friday, we do some media shout out. Dylan Smith, thanks, Dylan, for you and the team at TucsonSentinel.com, big supporters of what we do here. Dan Shear, the Green Valley News and Soharita Sun, Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Mike Ortega is with us. Mr. Ortega, the city manager for the city of Tucson. And Mike is celebrating with us his eight-year anniversary at the helm of the city of Tucson. Mike's anniversary is July 1st. And as I recall, Mike, it was shortly thereafter you did kind of your first interview as city manager with myself and Dylan Smith.
I do recall. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, well, we've had you a couple of times since then, yes. But it's always great to see you. Jim Nintzel is here. Mr. Nintzel spent more than 30 years with the Tucson Weekly as senior editor at Tucson Local Media and still an observer of the media, and he always will be. Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm doing well, and congratulations. I mean, I think the average lifespan of a city manager before you came along was about 2 years, so you've far exceeded the lifespan.
So one of the things that we've found out is that I'm actually the second longest tenured manager in the history of Tucson. Second only to Joel Valdez.
Right,
so you
Joel.
Remember Joel.
Sure, I do remember Joel. And Joel was at the helm for how many years?
16.
So you're halfway there.
Halfway.
But we did have a lot of turnover there, didn't we, for a while?
We did, and that
I remember one name came to mind, Mike Brown. Was that right?
Yeah. Yep.
A couple of Mikes. Mike Letcher, too.
How about Hine?
Mike Hine. There was a lot of Mike.
I'm still a friend with Mike Hine. He's down in Florida, I think. Yeah.
He is.
Yeah.
I tend to go by Michael now just because I was a little nervous about the word Mike. So.
Anyway, what about this spending program? This is a very busy time of year for the city. Tucson passed a $2.2 billion spending program for the next 12 months. Let's dig a little deeper into that. I mean, the headline is $2.2 billion, but what does that really mean?
Well, that's the entirety of our operating budget. And so when you break down the various funds that make up city government, that includes water and environmental services, that includes grants, that includes general fund.
Everything.
So that's the entirety of the city budget is $2.2 billion.
And what should we know about it that are kind of the headline items?
Well, I think first and foremost, and I think the first interview that I did with mm-hmm. you, Bill, and with Dylan, we talked about shortfalls. It seemed like that was the discussion we had back then was we were facing between $30 and $50 million shortfalls.
That was before the pandemic.
Absolutely. and so I think today what I can confidently say is that, you know, the budget in and of itself is sustainable. It's in a sustainable model. We are using ongoing revenues for ongoing expenses. We use one-time revenues for one-time expenses. So when you have to buy something that's one-time, you use one-time revenues. And so the other piece to it is that our reserves that we have been built up over time are strong. And that gives us the flexibility to weather other storms, weather other, you know, we do have concerns about the economy going forward, you know, some of the volatility in the environment that we're seeing today. So this gives us that flexibility to weather that without having to make radical changes in services.
The constituents appear to like what you and the team are doing. If we go back and look at some of these propositions, why don't you quickly give us an overview of what folks have said yes to, say, over the last 5 or 6 years?
Sure. So Prop 409 was a road package that was put forth. Then it was Prop 101. Prop 101 was a public safety and a road package. Prop 407 was a parks and connections. And then most recently, Prop 411. And Prop 411 is entirely roads. And so it really, and each of those ballot measures was approved by an increasing margin. And the last Prop 411 was approved by over 70%. So that's huge. And that does demonstrate the confidence that people have in our ability to deliver.
Your team that you've put together, you've got some very talented people, like this lady that is head of the Parks Department, Laura.
Yeah, right. Lara.
Lara. And the last name is
Hamway.
Hamway. She's going to be my guest here in a week or so. I've had her on once before, but
better learn to pronounce her name.
Well, that's why. Why do you think I just asked Mike, how do you pronounce her name? And I know it was because I remember from the first time it was a little bit different with the Lara. Yeah. Anyway, the park, people want an improved park system, and they're getting it, right?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, this past weekend, we just had a ribbon cutting for Gunny Barreras Park. It's over on South Campbell. And got a splash pad. They got a variety of other amenities there. That's just but one. And when you're looking at $225 million investment in parks, because of the voter-approved bond issue on Prop 407, it's incredible. It's transformational. And so we just went through some master planning efforts and community input on a variety of other parks, and they're scattered throughout the community. So we're pretty excited about that investment, which ultimately leads to the quality of life for our residents.
And Jim, before I give it over to you, but speaking of the parks, the pools, how many city pools do we have, and what percentage now will be actually functional for our eventually hot summer?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm going to steal Lara's thunder on that.
Okay.
Because I know she wants to announce it, I'm sure. But for the first time in many years, we're actually going to have all 20 of our pools open.
Really?
And that's significant. Last year, our goal was 10 because we couldn't find lifeguards. And so we embarked on an entire year of recruiting lifeguards. And so we were able to find enough lifeguards to staff all of our pools. Mm. And so we have 20. There are pools that are permanently closed, like the one over at Joaquin Murrieta Park. The vessel is actually cracked, so we can't open that one. But that's part of the Prop 407 improvements that'll help to get that up and running.
All right, let's bring my friend Jim Ninsel into our conversation with Mr. Ortega. I won't say, Michael Ortega. How about that? We won't say Mike. All right, go ahead, Jim.
Let's talk about the roads. You mentioned the roads have, you found support from the voters. RTA's had almost 20 years now to do road improvements as well, some of which have been in the city of Tucson. But you still hear complaints all the time about, oh, the roads in Tucson are terrible. So can you give us a sense of the percentage that you guys have been able to repair and kind of the what lies ahead in terms of what's the work still needing to be done?
Sure, that's a great question, Jim. And to be honest with you, I think that it's the single biggest complaint that I hear, that we hear, and that's not just from the elected officials, but from the residents. And the frustration is huge. So the Prop 411, which was our measure to go to the voters and get sales tax for it, was approved. We immediately mobilized in order to get packages put together so that we could get in the neighborhoods. The commitment is that every road in Tucson will be addressed over the next 10 years. And the key to that is, how do we approach it? So we've got a Citizens Oversight Committee that actually helps us with that and gives us an opportunity to bounce ideas around, including some of the technical treatments. Because there are programs out there that have cool pavement, for example. Well, that's great, and I'm good with trying that, but let's make sure that we get some feedback on that. Does it make sense? Ultimately, 100% of the roads will be touched over the next 10 years. Now, that's hard, right? Because if you live over on, you know, a street that needs attention, and then I tell you, hey, don't worry, within the next 10 years, I'm going to be by, you might get a little frustrated with me. The reality is that we got to this place due to lack of investment over many, many years. And it isn't the fault of the mayor and city council or the city of Tucson. It really is the structure for how roads are financed and funded. And when you look at gas tax as the way of addressing roads, and you realize with the change in the evolution of more efficient vehicles, changing the type of vehicles, the whole model needs to be studied. And quite frankly, the main reason for the conversation with the voters is because I don't see that changing at the federal or at the state level. So we're going to have to do it on our own for a while until those national models change. And then the national piece comes into play and helps us with our local challenges.
You mentioned the local, you know, your people get concerned about their own local street. But on the other hand, the whole point of streets is that you travel all over the place. So maybe that's one of those things that is a more global concern, you know, just or maybe people should focus on that in that sense. But in terms of what the city's looking for in the upcoming RTA package, what do you see as the priorities for the city of Tucson?
So the RTA, I think, is, first of all, the 2006 RTA was a great program that demonstrated the region can come together and the region can do great things when we set our minds to it and we work together. The next RTA has to be the same way. And what I've been really dissecting and looking at is the differences in needs for the region. I think in 2006, the roads were in such poor shape regionally that it was easy to band around. It was easy to identify what those needs were in a very consistent manner.
And not to interrupt, but we also needed some regional widening to capacity.
Capacity was huge. So one of the conversations that we're having at the RTA, and I am a chair or co-chair of the Technical Management Committee, is to really dissect the difference between a capacity improvement and what we call a modernization. So what does modernization look like? Well, that really is taking a roadway like North First Avenue that may not need additional lanes, but needs bus pullouts potentially, needs pedestrian walkways, needs bicycle facilities, needs other safety improvements to bring that up to a safer road, and we call it modernization. So the conversation then is, in other communities, capacity is still important. Okay, that's fine. In our community, in the urban core, we need to really focus on that modernization. And so as we start to look at the RTA Next chemistry, we're going to have that understanding that the needs are different across the region. Does not take away from capacity, but does not take away from modernization. It's just really an understanding of the difference in those needs.
And in terms of the projects still underway through the old RTA. You mentioned First Avenue, and it sounds like the city's looking to downsize the original vision, the original RTA vision for that, from six lanes to keeping it at four. Is that correct?
That's correct, Jim. And the mayor and council went through a pretty exhaustive public participation process, got feedback from not only the folks along First Avenue, but also in the community as a whole, came up with the fact that the needs are different today than what they were projected to be, which is great. So we had to really look at how do we address the need of today and what's projected compared to what we expected back in 2006. So the council made a recommendation to the RTA to scale back the capacity from six lanes to four, which is basically what's there, with modernization, which is drainage improvement, safety improvement, bicycle improvement, pedestrian improvement, other mobility, so that we start to really see the complete streets approach to making these improvements, where it's a holistic corridor conversation versus a vehicle-centric conversation.
All right. Okay,
Jim. You got a break?
Well, got a break, but go ahead. You want to have one?
One more one, and that is, I think that the really major project that's still on the books is Grant Road, and we can see when you drive down Grant Road, it looks like you're ready to move on to another phase because there's a whole lot of empty land along that stretch down around Country Club and such. What stretch is next for that, and what's the timeline on that?
So the pieces and I'm going to be hesitant in giving you an exact date, but what I will tell you is that the utilities, so technically they've already started because the utilities are relocating. And so if you look at the process, it's property acquisition, then it's utility relocation, and then construction, if you will, of the road. So those road segments have actually already started. And the piece that's between, I believe it's from Swan to right in the Alvernon area, where you see those poles that are out in the middle of nowhere, it looks like.
Yeah.
That's it. That's already basically started and will be continuing here in the not-too-distant future.
All right. Transportation, a big issue. So is water. That's next with Michael Ortega, Tucson City Manager, and Jim Nintzel, as we take a break on our Friday Focus interview on The Buckmaster Show.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview. We're happy to have the city manager as he gets ready to celebrate his 8th anniversary as the man at the helm of the city of Tucson, Michael Ortega. Jim Nintzel is here as well. Jim brought up one of the big issues, of course, in my stack of stuff was transportation. We can perhaps revisit that before we let you go. But I want to turn out, of course, the water issue. The New York Times had a front page article that some places up in the Valley of the Sun are saying we just cannot continue with the development because we just don't have the water supply. When you look at the sustainability of cities around the state, Tucson has got to be one of the success stories.
No doubt about it, Bill, and I think I would even boast the most successful in the water space. And one of the things that we need to think about today is we are in that space because of decisions that were made 30, 40 years ago. The vision that folks had, and it wasn't just the elected leaders of the time, it was business leaders, it was community leaders that all banded together to really identify water as the issue for our region.
We were talking about, and I've been here 35 years, you're right, Mike, we were talking about water in the 80s and yes, maybe even back to the late 70s when it was certainly not a fad. It was not on the radar screen for most cities.
Exactly.
We had a rough time in the 90s with the CAP delivery and the voter battles over recharge. And, oh, my God, it was a fierce time.
Toilet to tap, those battles.
Yeah.
But here's the reality, right? If you think about where we are today and how we got here, which is tremendous capacity of water. Our aquifer is rising every year. It actually is going the other way because we're bringing in CAP water. We have really focused on conservation. That's huge, huge, right? And leaders in that space to the point where our storage capacity, Phoenix has taken advantage of that through an intergovernmental agreement. Most people don't realize that. We're actually storing some of Phoenix's water.
Really? Here. I had not heard that at all.
And that is an arrangement that's been around for many years because Phoenix has no space. They have no place to store it like the vision that was really established by us in this region 30, 40 years ago in the Avra Valley area. And if you've ever come over Gates Pass Road and you see those big ponds that are out there, well, guess what? Those are City of Tucson water ponds that are CAP water that we are injecting into the aquifer. And so what happens is by our ability to use that water, we don't have to pump it out of the ground in the same rate that we used to do before. And so all of those pieces lead us to the long term. And so again, the challenge is in every discussion, long term.
Jim, do you have anything more on water?
Yeah, well, I know that the city, I don't pay attention to much anymore because I'm out of the biz, but I know that the city did offer to suspend delivery. Is it suspend delivery of some of our CAP allotment? Was that essentially the agreement as you know, this agreement is being worked out among all the states and everything else. So can you talk, and we've been taking more CAP water than we needed, and as you said, banking it
for decades now out in Avra Valley, and that's why we have the backup that we have. But talk a little bit about what the city council decided to do on that front.
That's a great question. I probably am remiss in not having mentioned that in my initial comments. So when you look at the way that the CAP works, it comes from the river, the Colorado River. So the Colorado River is an owl of our interest, and I'm talking about everybody in Arizona, California, Nevada, and keep going up the upper basin states. What the council did was, in anticipation of the drought continuing, actually left water in the lake or in the river. And so we actually negotiated an opportunity where we said, look, we will forego this extra, okay, and we don't use that term, but that I'll use that, that amount.
Excess capacity.
That we are due, that is actually due us, but we're going to forego that because we're really good folks and we want to do the right thing. And so we were able to leave that in anticipation of further cuts, because there's two ways to get to the end game, right? One is you do it yourself or they do it for you. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, guess what? If we're in the position of being leaders in that space, and we're able to leave that water there for now and forego a requirement for us to do it, it puts us in a much stronger position to negotiate. And I will tell you that Tucson is a force to be reckoned with in those conversations because of that leadership. That flexibility is really a function of those decisions that were made 30 and 40 years ago. And so we need to be thanking all of those long-term thinkers back then, because that gives us the flexibility to sit at the table with all of the federal agencies, with the other states, even at our own state, and say, look, we're in a great spot because we thought about this 30 years ago.
All right. Let's go to caller Matt. He called us on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, and I think he wants to bring up the water contaminants and some of the wells that had to be shut down because of those contaminants. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I think, Mike, the term I think he's looking for is PFAS.
PFAS.
Yes.
Regarding PFAS, there's been a lot of news on it recently, both from the Attorney General's office and nationally about the lawsuits. So I was hoping you could tell us where the city is on any of those lawsuits, if you can. I know that's more the city attorney's job. But the second part of it is, could you just quickly put PFAS and the filters and the TARP in context to CAP? And I know I used a lot of acronyms there, but I'll let you explain them. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, Matt, nice to hear from you. And by the way, Matt sends me email every now and then with stories and information that's of value in this mm-hmm. space. So with regard to PFAS, it's I always butcher the name, so we're just going to keep calling it PFAS. It's basically the Teflon byproduct that got into the it was also foam for firefighting.
Yes.
A variety of different uses, mm-hmm. plastics, those kinds of mm-hmm. things. And when you look at a map of those contaminants, it's very obvious that they are entering our water, our aquifer, from the airport and both the airport as well as the base, because that was used for firefighting.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a lot of training in that. So what we did is immediately, once we identified it, shut off those wells, isolated those areas from our drinking water. So I can tell you with absolute confidence that our drinking water is safe. We have separated those areas out, and we've gone to work at getting those cleaned, because that area is important for us in the long term. Now, the difficulty is... We have all these lawsuits, and I won't get into all the detail of them, but whose responsibility is it?
Right? To clean it all up,
is it
right?
Mine because I'm going to be serving it, or is it yours because you contaminated it, right? Well, our position has been it's not our fault, but we also know, and through the leadership of the mayor and council, we have gone as far as even preparing to clean some of that up on our own nickel for now, with the expectation we're going to go back and say, look, we cleaned this up. You made the mess. We're cleaning it up because we want our residents to continue to be safe, but you're going to have to pay us. That's all part of the conversations that we have in front of the courts, right? But ultimately, as Matt mentioned, all of this goes together, right? The fact that we do have CAP water that comes into the region, we do have capacity for it. We can't afford the flexibility of shutting down some of these wells. And that's important. Again, that decision from a long time ago gives us the flexibility to react today. And we do have successful partnerships. You know, back when TCE was a big deal, 1,4-dioxin was a big deal. Those are still huge, mm-hmm. but also seem to almost pale in comparison to the magnitude of PFAS today. And so when we have these conversations about who's responsible, we've got some really smart folks that sit around the table, and they can actually model what's happening to the aquifer and to those plumes.
These are forever chemicals, so they're real nasty, and they stick around, well, forever. The Tucson City Council decided it would be prudent, staying with water conservation, and to ban, what is this called, Mike? It's non...
Or it's ornamental turf.
Ornamental turf that would be used in, like, for businesses. It does exempt single-family homes.
It does, yeah. And I think this is, again, leading in a space of conservation. And if you mentioned, we've been talking about water conservation since the 70s, 80s, and this is another piece of that. And we are constantly looking for conservation measures, conservation opportunities on a per capita basis, and I don't have the numbers committed to memory, but we are using less water today than we have in many, many, many years, if not decades. And so when you start looking at that, why is it? A lot of it is because if there's more efficient fixtures, but there's also conservation measures that have been put in place. Most people embrace that. Most people are looking forward to being part of the team that we can point to say we've done some really good things and we're saving our future water supply.
We had Dr. Sarah Launius from your office on the show, and she has an interesting position. This office, this particular wellness and health group that's kind of been put together in your office over the past year, has really been looking at kind of the whole organic nature of having a good, for want of a better way of describing it, for improving the quality of life in the city of Tucson. And I know that Dr. Launius and others are working for kind of a hotline where if people see some water, that water is being left, there's a water pipe broken, there'll be a one-stop shop to call a number for anybody with city concerns of a non-emergency nature.
Absolutely. And I forget that I shouldn't, but I guess I forget that Sarah is actually a PhD
and
a doctor.
Yes, she is, in geography from the University of Arizona.
And thank you for reminding me, because mm-hmm. I just refer to her as Sarah. But
yeah.
But Sarah has done a phenomenal job in really standing up our community safety, health, and wellness program. She has really taken that role on and done some amazing work. There's two components of what I think she mentioned. One of them is the 311.
Yes.
We are getting ready to launch that. And the idea, it's already, if you called 311, you're actually going to get an operator now. So 311 is really intended to be a non-emergent city call center.
Mm-hmm.
So we get, unfortunately, we estimate about a third of our calls, 30% of our calls to the 911 center are non-emergent. They're non-emergency. And so we are trying to spin or peel those off so that we can get people services but not taking up the valuable time on a potential emergency.
Mm-hmm.
The second part of it, though, is also putting the right work in the right hands. And you've heard that rallying cry for a long time, particularly when it comes to public safety. And so the focus is there are gaps in our systems, everything from when and how a commissioned officer or firefighter attend to a resident's call, up to and including the healthcare, you know, mental health, substance abuse professionals. There's this gap in how that goes together. And so the idea is, how does this look for us going forward? And so Sarah's done an amazing job. It really is a program that's still in its infancy, but as you heard from her, she really hit the ground.
I mean, this could be somebody sees city workers, they're out doing maybe some tree trimming. Maybe they're taking a branch or maybe more than what someone would think they should take. This would be the place, this number, to call 311 rather than like 911 and tie up the emergency line. It's kind of a way I see it anyway.
It absolutely, and it really is, again, an opportunity to get information out to the residents without tying up 911.
Yeah. All right, Roberta has called us, and we are up against a break, but she wants to go back to the firefighting foam, and it is a good question. Go ahead, Roberta.
Yes, is it possible to outlaw those forever chemicals and use something else for firefighting?
Yeah, they are working on it, I think, aren't they, Mike?
Roberta, that's a great question, and I will tell you that there are a lot of folks, a lot of companies that are working on that. They've already introduced it in Europe, and that is making its way into the United States. Our fire chief, Chief Chuck Ryan, is right in the middle of that conversation so that it can be certified to be used here in the States. So they are close. I expect that in the not too distant future, there'll be some type of foam that will work equally as good.
And Chief Ryan will be with me 2 weeks from today here in studio, so we'll kind of take a deeper dive into some of that, what's going on with the chemicals. Take a break right here. A final segment with Michael Ortega, city manager, right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is our Friday Focus interview. We've got about six more minutes, lots to talk about with City Manager Michael Ortega, and Jim Nintzel is with me. The untimely passing of Donovan Durbin. Donovan was a fixture in the community for years. He worked for a time for a councilman in Councilman Kasacek's office, and Councilman Kasacek announced today that Donovan Durbin, to honor him, Mike Ortega, this upcoming second Saturdays downtown will be kind of dedicated to Donovan's memory. And then at the Fox Theater on Saturday, June 24th, noon to 2, there will be a celebration of Donovan's life.
Yeah, so thank you for mentioning Donovan, Bill. Donovan's passing has been devastating to the city team and the city family. You know, to have something like this happen, is a tragic event like that, is very, very difficult. You know, a lot of people don't know, and you mentioned that Donovan was a council aide, and he did that for several years, and then was also very, even before that, instrumental. I think it was called the Downtown Alliance or the Downtown Business Alliance, something like that, and was very instrumental in actually developing the Second Saturday concept and idea and all the logistics of that. You know, he and his partners at that time, you know, Fletcher McCusker came in and helped out with that as well. But Donovan was really a true pillar of that effort, and that, and his passion for downtown was incredible. And I remember working in the downtown area back in the 90s. I don't want to date myself too much, but watching the evolution of, and I'll use the term decline, to this incredible renaissance that we know of as downtown Tucson, Donovan was an integral part of that.
This weekend, then, will mark the first Second Saturdays downtown since Donovan's passing. Donovan passed away in his sleep last weekend, and there's going to be several activities this Saturday night. And again, we point to noon to 2. At the Fox Theater. That'll be Saturday, June 24th. Jim, I mean, we remember Donovan from the early days of Rio Nuevo and trying to get more parking downtown. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he did. He was obviously very dedicated to downtown, not just the parking, but the arts and culture and activities and bringing people there to have something fun to do, and I know he'll be deeply missed.
All right, Jim, you want to talk about the homeless population, or as some are calling it, the unsheltered population?
Yeah, and we don't have much time, and it's certainly a huge issue.
Yeah.
But you guys purchased a hotel. That's going to ease it, but it's probably a drop in the bucket compared to the need. So I guess why has the problem accelerated so much, and what other solutions are the city looking at?
Sure, Jim. And I think that and maybe what we do is I'll come back sometime when we have a little more time. We can talk
Please.
More detail.
I'm
happy to do that, because I do think it's on people's minds, and I think that there are a lot of really you know, important pieces of this to get into detail. But when you look at the point in time count that was recently published, it shows a 300% increase since 18. And so when you just look at those two pieces, you scratch your head and say, well, how could this possibly have happened? You know, what went on? Well, I go back and I dissect what happened during the pandemic. So during the pandemic, the Center for Disease Control, as well as our Pima County Health Department guidance, was to not disrupt these encampments because of the spread of the virus. And so what happened is you look at the amount of encampments and then the services that they needed, along with the reduction in bed space. So if you remember some of the social distancing challenges that we all faced, it wasn't just keep 6 feet away from each other. But in some of these shelters, they actually were told you can only have a quarter or half of the number of beds that you used to have. Well, some of those shelters have been slow in increasing their capacity over time for a variety of reasons. Staffing is some, and just, you know, physical resource. So when you look at that entirety of the package, and again, you asked why, and I'm trying to give you those that perspective, it's tough. However, when you start to look at partnering with the nonprofit community, partnering with shelters, you can see that year over year, we're actually seeing a slight decrease in the number of folks that are out on the street. Is there any singular solution? I can tell you that it's there. I haven't identified it. It is simply the most complex issue that I've ever faced in the entirety of my career, because there are pieces of it that are both society, justice, courts, enforcement, you know, nonprofit, civic, social. I mean, just pick it. You know, I didn't even mention fentanyl. I didn't even mention drug abuse, mental health treatment. All of those pieces are part of this. And so I think the complexity of it leads us to a tremendous amount of challenge. But I do think that working together, we can address it.
Bill, yeah, are we out of time?
Almost, but real quickly. And I think we need to bring Mike Ortega back here in a month or two to really go, because we have run out of time.
I'll put a pin in it. It's all right. We'll visit it another time.
But we do need to bring you back.
We
haven't talked about the situation with police. In the budget, is there some money for more cops?
There is money for continued recruitment of officers.
Yeah,
that's
good
the big
luck
thing.
Trying to find
yeah,
them.
But we've got some game plans there that I can share in the future.
Jim, were you still wanted to go on a quick follow up on homeless? I'll give you 30 seconds. How's that?
I'm kind of curious how much the rising rents has impacted the whole thing.
Again, incredibly complex. And yes, right? I mean, if someone is evicted and has no place to go, can't afford to live where they were living or find other, it does. Is it the reason? Not necessarily the reason, but it is part of it.
Affordability.
Absolutely. It's affordability across all sectors and across all strata.
All right, Michael Ortega. Mike, congratulations, 8 years with the city. I'll be contacting your people to talk about getting you on the program probably a time in August before Labor Day. And we try to go into the homeless situation a little bit more, because I think I heard you say, and you've had quite a long career, this is the most perplexing problem that you have encountered professionally. Did I characterize that right?
You absolutely heard that right.
Okay. Jim Nitzel, thank you, Jim. And we've got you on the calendar for a couple of more events here, Jim. So, it's not like, don't be a stranger.
Every time I try to get out, pull me back
in,
Bill.
I pull you back in. Don't be a stranger. All right, Weekend Watch with Matt Russell next.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
It is time for Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. What a great weekend this would be to just hop in the car, jump in the truck, take off on the motorcycle and head over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive, depending on where you are coming from in the Tucson Valley. But look at that temperature, around 70, 71 midday over in Silver City. As we say, in the summertime especially, it's 10 degrees at least cooler because of that elevation. So great time of year in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find what to do, where to stay, and where to dine. And speaking of dining, let's bring in the longtime host of Weekend Watch, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, how are you?
Well, I'm doing great, and so nice to hear my buddy Jim Nitzel on the show.
It's been
a while since I've heard him, and he was my former editor at Inside Tucson Business. Always fun listening to the both of you talk.
A little bit of a tease. You'll be hearing a little bit more from Jim. He's going to be with us a few more times, so you're going to hear more of Jim Nitzel.
All right. I love it.
What's going on at the Chul?
Yeah, you know, it's summertime here in Tucson when chilling at the Chul returns to the Tohono Chul Gardens. Every Friday and Saturday through September 2nd from 5 to 9 p.m., Tohono Chul invites us all to come out for a little summer chilling in the garden. They're going to have music and refreshing spirits and some light bites from their bistro. Now, Bill, if you know me, my perfect pairing out there is a prickly pear margarita, a red chili chicken taco with pickled jalapenos, and a Chul Sonoran dog. Now, that's how I launch my weekend. It's tonight and tomorrow at Tohono Chul.
I can just see it. Tuck that napkin into the top button on the shirt there.
That's it.
Speaking of pairings, how about a pairing party? We've been talking about downtown a little bit on the show earlier. What's going on?
Absolutely. We got a pizza pairing party. It's happening Sunday from 5 to 8 p.m. At the location that's soon going to be the Shirt Shop at 100 East Congress. It's a California wine and pizza party. It's going to take over this space entirely. Four pizzas, four different wines, and the pizza dough will come from local celebrity baker and James Beard Award winner Don Guerra with Barrio Bread. And those pizza pies are going to be fired with mesquite wood. This is a totally Tucson experience. Tickets are only $35, so grab your honey, make it a date night, and you will not break the bank.
I always look forward to these summer menus that some of our fine eateries roll out.
Absolutely, and you know it's summer when the cuisine gets a little lighter and the cocktails get a little brighter. Flora's Market Run on 6th and Tucson, they're showing us all what summer can taste like with the recent reveal of their new summer menu and happy hour. How about a lemon basil chicken salad sandwich or a corn carbonara salad? And from behind the bar, get ready, the sage pear gimlet definitely got my attention. New summer cocktail. Happy hour runs every single day from 3 to 6 p.m. All kinds of summer deals and discounts, so celebrate the season in style over at Flores Market Run. Sounds so good.
You mentioned basil, Jim. I mean, Matt Russell, you mentioned basil. I'm all in. I'll tell you, I love basil.
Fresh summer basil. It just has the fragrance and the flavor of summer.
There you go. Have a great weekend. Thank you, Mr. Matt Russell.
Cheers, Bill.
All right.
Thanks.
The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Wholly responsible for the content of the program. Thanks to Rose Brandt, my assistant, making sure that we get all those podcasts up in a very timely manner. Thanks to Tom Fairbanks, my longtime engineer and producer, the entire team at Bustos Media Tucson. Be well, everybody. Stay safe, and I hope everyone out there has a lovely weekend.